This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, April 11th, 2021, and WrestleMania has just ended. And we will talk today about the capacity crowd, well, the limited capacity crowd, the alleged sellouts of WrestleMania Night 1 and Night 2, how were ticket sales, the Wednesday Night Wars came to an end this week, NXT and AEW will no longer go head-to-head on Wednesday Night, NXT moving to Tuesday beginning this week, and the Undertaker NFTs have dropped, yes, the non-fungible tokens. What is a non-fungible token? What is this crypto madness? I'm not quite sure, but one of them currently has a high bid of $100,000. And WWE's Chief Revenue Officer and President Nick Khan had a really interesting interview earlier this week. We will unpack some of his comments on this program today. And now we will be joined by our correspondent from live, well, on demand to all the listeners, from HQ2, WrestleNomics HQ2, our fine correspondent, Chris Gullo, who we have just finished watching Night 2 of WrestleMania. Welcome, Chris Gullo.
Yeah, I got my coffee ready, and hey, WrestleMania didn't end at 12:30, so I'm happy about that.
Yes, there were no rain delays here on the second night. We do have a strict list of rules that I've shared with you about how we're going to go about conducting this. You have a new microphone today. You have a mic stand. You managed to partially destroy the new microphone that you acquired today. But I think we're here, and the waveforms are bouncing, so the recording is underway.
Listen, it might have been cheaply made, and it was just an accessory, Eric.
You're recording now with an AT20, which is a pretty good podcasting microphone. The challenge today was getting that microphone mounted on a mic stand.
Yes.
And you sent me a very blurry picture earlier today of a broken, I don't know what to call it, the joint that you would use to screw the microphone into the mic stand.
Yes.
Which this was I don't know, about an hour I spent texting you on how to attach the microphone to the mic stand, and there was a shock mount involved. It was a big mess. But
swear, well, I have a degree in communications, media.
And I was thinking this long way. I was thinking, you know, he probably knows what he's doing. He went to college for this, and you know, we've been on many wrestling shows together where you spend hours after the show breaking down all this equipment and lighting stuff and audio stuff. And I figured, you know, he probably knows what he's doing. And
but now that it's set up, we're good to go.
Okay, so go ahead and get in the driver's seat, Chris Gullo, and tell me where you want to go first.
All right. Well, we just talked about how we just finished watching WrestleMania, and let's kind of talk about ticket sales that were leading up to Night 1 and 2 of WrestleMania. I know I heard reports of a little around 1,000 tickets left between both nights, and that was a couple days ago. But what do you know, Brandon?
So WWE has now put out two press releases, one for each night, announcing the same number of fans in attendance for each night, 25,675 fans in attendance at WrestleMania at Raymond James Stadium, Tampa. In less than an hour, I have an email that is scheduled to be sent to the Tampa Sports Authority requesting, in pursuant to the Florida Sunshine Law, tell me, I would like some, what's that?
What is the Florida Sunshine Law?
The Florida Sunshine Law, at least relevant to what we're talking about, is you can request access to records that are made public because there were government entities involved in the business, which is a very crude way to explain it. It's very much like a Freedom of Information Act request, I think. So basically, this is a government entity, and the government has decided that citizens should be allowed to get access to things that the government is doing. So that's how people like John Alba have gotten access to the at least part of the agreement between, I think he actually has the full agreement, the agreement between Raymond James Stadium and or the Tampa Sports Authority. The moral of the story here is that the Tampa Sports Authority is the organization that is in charge of the venue. So that's a way that people and journalists often get access to records, is because there are government agencies involved in them. And then there's a records request made. So we'll see what we get here. A year ago or so, I guess, David Bixon's band did an article that reviewed a lot of different records that he was able to get a hold of through records requests that gave us a lot of information about WrestleMania business. So we'll see. Anyway, 25,675 is the number for each night, which would total 51,350. I heard things, you know, leading up to the show that, you know, WWE internally was not happy with how ticket sales were going, and I'm not sure really what to believe here. As all things WrestleMania attendance go, I would be dubious of this number. Now, granted, this is a different situation where you got limited attendance, so you don't necessarily want to say that you had a lot of people in excess of what you were supposed to have. You know, you're only supposed to have a 25,000 capacity, but there were tickets. If you looked at Ticketmaster, I looked at Ticketmaster at 10 o'clock on Saturday at the Saturday event, and there were what looked to be hundreds of blue dots indicating these are tickets that are available on the hard cam side of the venue. So it looks like there were at least, in the hours, the few hours before the event, there were hundreds of tickets available for Saturday. Sunday, it looked like there were not as many. There were more like dozens of tickets available for Saturday. And if you look at the secondary market on sites like SeatGeek and Vivid Seats, you'd see the secondary market, the ticket prices were so low. I'm not sure what the face value of the tickets were, as far as the tickets that I saw listed on the secondary market, but I saw prices for Sunday that were as low as $20 or $30. So I would imagine that was below face value. Night one, I have in notes here. Night one, I saw tickets as low as $45 on both secondary market sites. And I saw night two tickets in the $30 range. So it just suggests to me that it's not as if certainly these tickets were not, it was not a fast sellout with a high demand. I think the demand was at best just below what they had in supply. But we'll see in the Q2 report, which will come out in July or August. So not the report that is coming up on, I think April 23rd is the next one. But in July, there will be a Q2 report that will include the month of April. And we might get some kind of disclosure or some kind of information that will allow us to determine what the paid attendance was. But let's say they're reporting over 51,000 fans. They did not report a gate here, which they do in some years. But let's say 40,000 paid. And let's say the average ticket price was maybe $250, which is in line with what WrestleMania tickets have been in the past. Average ticket price. And if you multiply 40,000 paid tickets by an average ticket price of $250, you get $10 million. And so a $10 million gate would be just below what a normal WrestleMania does. A normal WrestleMania these days in the pre-COVID times does somewhere between $14 and $17 million. The all-time record for a pro wrestling show in real dollars all-time is WrestleMania 32 at $17.3 million. Again, this one looks to maybe have done about 10 million. And in terms of merchandise, I would estimate usually merchandise per head is somewhere around $10 to $12. I would think it's a little bit higher for a WrestleMania crowd. On the other hand, this is a WrestleMania crowd where many of the attendees attended twice. So I don't know. If we say, just to take a guess, $14 per head, that would come out to another $500,000. So $10.5 million, just a rough guess as far as how much money was made from the live gate and from the venue merchandise. That's probably probably in the range of what it costs to put on this show. But that's what I think and estimate at this time.
I assume that was the best they could hope for, though. I mean, with everything going on. So
Well, UFC sold it out. Sold out their they're doing an arena show in Jacksonville, yeah, and they sold
smaller
that out
arena
quickly.
Though. 17,000.
I think the average UFC fan is just probably less concerned about COVID than the average WWE fan is my conjecture. So
one of the things I saw too, just through social media, was a lot of people that were in attendance, and this might be such a small number, but a lot of people in attendance were wrestlers who wrestled all week at the WrestleMania shows, or fans that were at all those shows. So like, I found that
including
very
Jimmy Lloyd.
Yes. And he got a free shirt.
He did. As people may know, he's the newest member of the Hurt Business because he was made to put that shirt over his GCW shirt, which was not to be seen on air on the Peacock.
Which I don't understand that, like, why that would even matter to them. So, speaking of WrestleMania, there was an auction that actually started at WrestleMania Saturday, and it just ended, and it was for Undertaker NFTs. Brandon, before we get into the specifics of it, what is an NFT? Because even though we talk about it off air, like, it's still confusing. Yes.
Do you know what NFT is? It will say non-fungible token. Non-fungible token. Do you know what that is?
It's basically you own a piece of digital media, from what I understand. It's almost like digital memorabilia, you would even say?
It's a crypto. Yeah, it's a something that lives on the blockchain that records your ownership and will record a custody of ownership. If I have an NFT and I sell it to you, it will create a record of that. That is somehow very secure. Anyway, NFTs are all the rage in the last 2 months or so. I can tell a story, in fact, about the day that I first heard about an NFT and it entered into my brain. I was talking to someone who was a WWE investor, and he said something about, I thought he was talking about NXT, and I said, what about NXT? And he said, no, NFT. I have no idea what that is. But on March 11th, an artist on Instagram named Beeple, who's been creating daily artworks for however many years, sold a JPEG of every artwork that he's made over that time for $69 million, which is sold as an NFT. And NBA Top Shots has had apparently great success selling. Basically, you think of it like a sports trading card, but it's a digital trading card, and it's a highlight video. But then there's like limited supplies, and I don't know. There's all sorts of speculation and corresponding cynicism about this and how this is a crazy market. But there were a number of tiers for the Undertaker NFTs sold. The platinum tier, the gold tier, the silver tier, the bronze modern tier, and the bronze retro tier. Two of these were put up as an auction. The platinum had an opening bid price of $10,000 that was defined by WWE. WWE is doing this in partnership with a company called Bitski. And I should mention too that we discovered from a press release from March that WWE is actually also an investor in an NFT company, or at least a company that is getting involved in an NFT platform called, where is it here? Called Rad Collectibles. So this is apparently not related to Bitski, but in any event, the Undertaker platinum card, which is like a video of the Undertaker tossing Mankind off the Hell in the Cell at King of the Ring 1998, opened at $10,000. First bid was $10,000, $10,001. The second bid was on $100,000, $100,000. And no one has has outbid that person. That auction has ended as we sit here right now. The gold tier, which I think started at 1,000 or something, that has 10 minutes left on the auction timer. $27,000 is the current bid there. That has gone up a little bit. There has been a little bit more competition for that one. And then they sold a limited number of these Undertaker silver NFTs for $1,000. And then the bronze tier was $100. Some of these were put out in timing with the doors opening for WrestleMania and put out. You probably saw the commercials. A lot of people, I'm sure, saw the commercials, I think, during SmackDown and during WrestleMania advertising these things. So I don't know. I think it's a lot of speculation, and I think a lot of it is the idea. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, it just looks like it's honestly just an extra source of income that really there's no cost for them on this. But here's what I understand. Here's what I don't understand.
Well, there's probably a cost. There's probably a cost as far as like whatever it costs they're doing this in partnership with Bitsky. They're probably splitting some of the money with Bitsky. It probably costs Bitsky to, hold up the infrastructure. I've heard that it's very expensive and not, I don't know, but very expensive, but not environmentally friendly because it's blockchain. Don't ask me to explain why that is, but yeah, go ahead.
So let's just say you buy this digital art of media. I just won the platinum. So now I have this digital media of Undertaker throwing Mick Foley off the cage. Am I allowed to use that media in any capability that I would want? Like, I'm going to put it on my YouTube channel. And
I don't know. It's not as if you own those seconds of the King of the Ring. I don't think it's that. I think it's like, I don't know. It would be like if you owned a sports trading card that somehow contained a video.
Okay.
Also, the person who wins platinum did not just win the NFT, but also won like WrestleMania tickets and won like a real Paul Bearer.
Undertaker meet and greet, I think. Yeah.
Yes. A personalized message from Mark Calloway himself. The total, and this is not including whatever they did today, because I have not updated the total amount of money that they have generated from this. But it looks like about $200,000, something like that, $196,000 or something close to that is what they have generated from. So probably well over $200,000 if I counted in the new Browns ones that just dropped. So, that's not a ton of money in the W scale of a company that generates about $1 billion a year, but it's only the beginning. It's only the first one. I don't know. I think a lot of the speculation here is that, these are the first of their kind, sort of like the Honus Wagner card, which is like one of the oldest baseball cards that used to be just, distributed through tobacco, through cigarettes or something. That these would be really valuable because you will in decades from now say, oh, I have the first WNFT. So we'll see. There seemed to be a lot of practical applications for NFTs as well. Like maybe someday, just because it's a secure way of verifying ownership, this may be something that when you buy a house in the future or a car in the future, there will just be an NFT attached to it. And it seems like it might be really useful to monetize intellectual property in a way that guarantees the creator certain royalties in the future.
Where do you see the growth on it? Because I know I sent you an article yesterday where Jake Paul's knockout of Nate Robinson, $10 million. And, will WWE, maybe these celebrities, they just had Jake Paul's brother on WrestleMania. Maybe they'll start using these celebrities for their NFTs and generate some, buzz that way. If that went for $10 million, I could see some WWE stuff going in the seven figure range, depending on what it is.
Yeah, maybe. I think I think the speculation value on it is this is the first WWE one. Or this is, in the case of the NBA, this is one of the early LeBron James NFTs. We'll see. A lot of people who I see make comments about this think that this is a way inflated market. There's, as opposed to other high-priced art, like think about people trading, old paintings that are really famous and expensive. The idea is that you have a market in that case that you have, insanely rich people who just want to, own expensive stuff. You have people who really love art and they want to be collectors. So you have those sort of captive markets. And the argument is that in this case, you don't have any of that. This is just pure speculation, unless a market eventually grows into something that is real. The weird thing to me, just to try to wrap my head around it, is that unlike a physical piece of art or a physical trading card, how do you display this thing and like show off that you're the owner of the NFT? I'm not sure, but maybe new technologies will find ways for NFT owners to display their NFTs.
Maybe it will be those picture frames that you could just display whatever's on your phone and display video. So,
right. I guess. And that's the weird thing. It's like, well, why can't I just, this clip exists on YouTube. Why can't I just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can just play that. So very, very strange, but yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Something ended this week, Brandon. It was the Wednesday Night War, the last battle on Wednesday nights between AEW and NXT, and NXT actually got a victory on their way out. Shed some more details on that for the listeners.
So the Wednesday Night War, after some 75 weeks of head-to-head competition between AEW Dynamite and WNXT, Wednesday night, of course, was always NXT's night. It's not that they went to cable to compete with AEW. No, it was always their night, and they went to, in their public explanation, they went to cable and made NXT 2 hours to grow the media rights value of a third brand, which now, I think as we discussed last week, NXT has, or WWE has now renewed its deal for NXT with NBC Universal / USA Network. But as you said, NXT TakeOver, which was also two nights, just like WrestleMania was, NXT TakeOver was on USA Network, and it was also being streamed on Peacock. So even despite the fact that it was on Peacock and the USA Network, and we have no idea what the Peacock viewership was, NXT was still viewed by more total viewers than Dynamite was. Dynamite still led in the demo of 18 to 49. But that is one of the, I think, 10 times, only 10 times in this 75 night head-to-head competition. That's excluding the nights where they were preempted and they were not running head-to-head and simultaneously. AEW won 63 of the 75 nights. I think there were two ties and yes, 10 nights NXT won. And they're scattered pretty, consistently throughout the timeline. November 2019, November 2019, December 2019, April 2020, another one in April 2020, June 2020, July 2020, a second one in July 2020, the most recent one before this week was October 28th, which was the Halloween Havoc special. Yep. Episode, and then this week April 7th. That's in total viewership, and as we've learned, the key demo is the only thing that matters. Are you aware of this discourse?
Yes. It's all about the key demos. The 1849.
Tell me your, what is your description of the reasoning here? Why is
I would imagine that is the most desirable demographic to advertisers.
Yeah. So my understanding is that, when ads are sold against a program, they're never sold against the total viewership. They're sold against a certain ad demo. Yeah. And when we see these ad demos reported by Showbiz Daily, and I take it that these are all the demos that you could, these are examples of demos that you could possibly buy an ad for. And I think P50 Plus is even an ad demo that people probably buy. And that's probably where you see the vitamin commercials and the whatever. That's probably where you see the Jay Lethal knee brace commercials, and they're probably Jeopardy,
stuff like that, the advertisers. Yeah
you're probably getting there are certain products that you want to, okay, I want to hit people 50 and older, but anyway, the 1849 is thought to be the most I think it's the most popular or most valuable ad demo, because people between the ages of 18 to 49, or maybe even 25 to 54, which is the other one I see, these are people who have full-time jobs. They're not kids or students who are in school. They have money, but they're also not over the age of 50. So they're thought not to be as brand loyal yet as people who are 50. And the notion is that people over the age of 50, for whatever reason, they've already made up their minds about what brands they like, and they're less likely to be swayed and to be prone to advertising. So I believe, this is what I believe, that AEW, because TNT Turner is very focused on the 18 to 49. I think they've all but told you know, AEW, that they don't really care what they do in terms of total viewership. Total viewership is nice, especially if you're a wrestling company, you're trying to sell tickets and merchandise and pay-per-views. Yeah, that matters. I think it's definitely worth studying and taking seriously. But Turner really cares about the 18 to 49 demographic because that's what they're selling ads against. They're not selling ads against total viewership. I think WWE, I'm not really sure, but I do know that WWE, when they made their TV deals most recently, they have included both 18 to 49 and total viewership in their pitches to the networks that they're telling, you know, they want an even better deal from. So, that's what I believe. Go ahead.
What do you predict next week? Because next week's going to be interesting, and I can't wait for you to cover it. But what do you predict both of these, you know, programs do? Because they're not going to be running against each other, going to be on different nights. You would imagine a bump in both. The 1849 demo will be interesting for NXT. Does that go up higher than it has been because it's on a different night, or do they just have a loyal certain age group audience? I would imagine total viewership for both would go up.
Yeah, I think NXT has more to gain here because they were losing in the war. I think fans, it's pretty clear too, if you watch the trends of 18 to 49 over time in the course of the timeline of the Wednesday Night War, you see the lead get stronger for AEW over time. Especially when I did the breakdown by 18 to 49 viewers as a percentage of total audience. But anyway, I think what I believe happened is that over time, especially around the time that COVID started, wrestling fan viewers on Wednesday night decided that they liked watching AEW more and spent more of their time watching AEW and less of their time watching NXT. Obviously, NXT still had, you know, somewhat of an audience, but didn't have as large of an audience. So I think we have those few weeks in August and September to show us what happened when they weren't opposed and when they were in their normal time slots. And NXT improved by 29% in one case, by 24% in the other case, improved by 37% in the key demo. Meanwhile, AEW improved by 13% and 24%. And in the key demo only improved by 13% and 16%. So I think what we're going to see is, the numbers will be even closer now that they're not competing head to head. I think total viewership will be very close. May even go back and forth in terms of who did the bigger number in the given week. Key demo, I would expect AEW to continue to do a little bit better because I would have to just sit down and do the math. But even if we added, you know, if we gave NXT the 37% that they gained in both instances when they were on Wednesday night unopposed, they did not add that on to AEW, they would still be short of what AEW is doing in the key demo.
All right. So yeah, it will be interesting to see now that there is no more war and to see how both programs do progress. Next, do we want to discuss the Nick Khan interview on Colin Cowherd's show? Or I heard there's a special WrestleNomics presentation.
We have a. Did you know that everybody's been doing these interviews? I've noticed lately this WrestleMania weekend. I don't know if it's just because of what I was happening to pay attention to this week, but there's a lot of media happening. I saw. Nick Khan, we're going to go through the Nick Khan interview in a little while. Christina Salen was interviewed as the CFO for WWE. She was interviewed by CNBC. Stephanie McMahon was quoted in that article as well. I was in Marketplace. Did you know this? This is the NPR show Marketplace. The L article on Becky Lynch dropped this week. Did you see that?
I heard about that. Yes.
I was interviewed for that piece. Not quoted though. this is about a year ago. She's been working on that for a long time. Very funny thing in that interview. I talked to this author for about an hour or so about WWE, and towards the end of the conversation, she said to me, "Do they hate you?"
You know, I pondered the same question.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well,
I feel like you might be on a list.
Who knows? The people who I've interacted with from WWE have been very nice to me. That's all I can say. So anyway, tons of media happening this week. And so we have here an exclusive interview. Did you know that Vince McMahon did a media call? So, Triple H does these media calls all the time. And, Tony Khan does these media calls all the time. But Vince never does them. But Vince, people don't know this, but Vince did a media call this week. And not many people have heard it, but we have the audio exclusive. This might not be real audio, but we have the audio this week. And we are going since no one else has a hold of this thing, we have another exclusive. I thought about putting this on the on the Patreon, or actually inventing a new tier for the Patreon. But I decided this sort of information needs to be heard by a wide audience. So we will go to that audio now.
Welcome to the call entitled Vince McMahon WrestleMania Back in Business Conference Call. This call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Matthew Potkins. Please, go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Hope everybody's doing well and staying safe. Thank you for making the last-minute changes on the timing. So we appreciate that. And without any further ado, I'm going to turn things over to our chairman and CEO, Vince McMahon.
Welcome, everyone. First of all, I'd like to say from the top, I can't believe I'm doing this. Stephanie says it'll be good for the brand. Quite frankly, I don't agree with her, but you have to allow a certain amount of leeway in that regard. That notwithstanding, we have a tremendous WrestleMania coming up. Well, everyone else is afraid of the goddamn virus. Well, there have been a number of goddamn government restrictions in our way. WWE will show that we're the first to be back in business. And we never stop, by the way. Well, every other live sport and form of entertainment has sort of backed down from this thing. We've completely reimagined our form of entertainment. In any event, WrestleMania, this year, it's really a culmination of my 40-year quest for respect. Unquestionably, it'll be a tremendous opportunity to reconnect with our universe, which we really never lost our connection with, thanks to the Thunderdome and things of that nature. And even though ticket sales and merchandise sales and television ratings and network subscribers have been down for a number of years, it's really all offset and then some by our engagement on digital and social and things of that nature. We've really never had more fans than we do right now. And with that, Matthew, you can turn this over to those goddamn dirt sheet writers.
Okay, everybody. Let's limit it to one question per outlet, especially for the mainstream outlets. But if you're at a dirt sheet, we prefer that you just not ask a question at all. Okay.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach the equipment. We'll take the first question from Brian Charmuse.
Hey, guys. Yeah, thanks for taking the time today. It's just such an honor to speak to you, Mr. McMahon. I mean, WrestleMania is obviously just the most amazing event in entertainment, and obviously the whole world is just unbelievably at maximum excitement for this. Everywhere I go, people are asking me and talking about WrestleMania, WWE, the showcase of the immortals. There's nothing like it in entertainment, and I'm just so lucky I get to do this for a living.
Okay, right. Maybe this isn't so bad. You get to ask another question.
Whoa. Oh, wow. Mr. McMahon, thank you. I'm so honored. Okay, well, just how amazing is it? Just tell us, how big of a deal is it that WrestleMania WWE is back in business when nobody else did what you guys did. How excited are you to be back in business?
This COVID thing, it's like, well, the whole world's been a little bit too scared of this thing. The virus, in essence, did try to infect me, but I'm just too goddamn manly. I didn't have time to get sick. Be that as it may, the world is getting back to normal, especially in Florida and things of that nature. But quite frankly, this business with Dana and so forth, coming back in Jacksonville, quite frankly, I'm absolutely livid about and just seething with jealousy. That son of a bitch, what I wouldn't give to be back in the arenas with the entire universe there. Yet, on the other hand, I have to consider the fact that our live audience was quite frankly standing in the way of a lot of our progress. So, in any event, having the Thunderdome as we have, it's just been an extraordinary accomplishment on our part. It's really been an unprecedented relief. And just being in the Thunderdome these last months, although it has been massively expensive, it's really been a dream come true for me. Really, for the first time in God knows how many years, I feel like I'm in control again. God, I love feeling like I'm in control.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Have a really, really great WrestleMania. I know you will.
Next, Tim Tellington from Sports Life.
Oh, hi, Vince. Thanks for taking the time today. You know, just, I have these memories going back over the years of guys like Big John Studd and Andre the Giant, you know, the eighth wonder of the world. You know, just some of these amazing superstars your company's put out over the decades. Now, totally unrelated to that, just if we get an update on what is the status of tickets, are they sold out, and how many people does WWE expect to be in the stadium on Saturday and Sunday?
At present, we've announced a capacity of 25,000. That's 50,000 for both days combined. That comes out to half of 100,000. In any event, in effort to take on this challenge of filling all of these seats, our talent relations department has completely reimagined their vision and realized that they finally have something to do with the hundreds of performers who we have currently under contract. And I'm proud to announce that an overwhelming portion of the Universe members in attendance on Saturday and Sunday will be performers from our performance center who will have their WrestleMania moment by sitting in the audience and providing the intended reactions.
That's great, Vince. Thanks, and good luck tomorrow.
Next, we'll take a question from King of Bong Style 01 from the Blade Job Podcast. You're muted. You're muted.
Oh, do you hear me now? Hello?
Yes, goddammit, go ahead.
Huh? Oh. Okay. Mr. McMahon, I was wondering which match on the card are you most looking forward to? Which match do you think is going to be the best?
We don't have cards. We have events. From my standpoint, quite frankly, I have to admit, I'm most looking forward to seeing my son Shane fight for my love. I understand there might be thunderstorms, but I frankly don't give a damn. He's getting in the cage. Rain, shine, or lightning.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from Arena Club. .com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous round bag of cards. And yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
This is the only time of the year when I actually hug Shane. So I'm anticipating what he'll do this year to prove his loyalty and his affection when he goes one-on-one with the man among men, Braun Strowman. Right?
Next, Dan Seltzer from the Wrestling Viewpoint newsletter. You're muted. Sir, you're also muted.
Yeah, so thanks for taking the time. Just with COVID now, we can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel. Or maybe we can't totally see, but the idea is that we're at least getting closer to fans being back in attendance. So what are you looking for that's going to inform your decision about the return to live events? And is there any chance that we might see WWE find an outdoor location where fans could attend? You know, AEW's really been doing that going all the way back to the summer. With fans in attendance while WWE's been doing the Thunderdome.
Turn it off. This is not they're not competition. God damn. It's like the NBA's G League. We're in competition with Disney, with the NFL. This is Turner all over again. Matthew, shut it down. Shut it off. Let's go. It's over with.
All right, folks, that'll wrap up today's conference call. Thank you all for joining us, as always.
So there you have it. We cannot confirm the authenticity of that that audio, but it was distributed to me through blockchain and through other types of cryptocurrency, you know, and things of that nature.
How much do you think that NFT will go for?
What NFT?
Well, the NFT of that audio.
We are in discussion with a number of organizations about potentially releasing the NFT. I've thought about, we should release NFTs of charts, the images of charts, of course. Again, cannot confirm the authenticity of that audio, but that you can see why that did not get mass distribution through the traditional outlets. Anyway,
well, as you hear from that and what you brought up earlier, it was Media Week, where a lot of WWE executives as well as talents were doing interviews. And there was an interview this week on the Colin Cowherd podcast with Nick Khan. And this was interesting dynamic to begin with, because Nick represented Colin as an agent. So
did you listen to this whole thing or just the clips?
I did listen to this whole thing. Yes.
Yeah. Colin Cowherd has a little bit of a history with wrestling. Do you know about this?
Yeah, the Eddie Guerrero situation.
Controversial comments. I think it was him, too, who made the Owen Hart comment way back in 1999. Was it him who played the Tom Petty song, Long Way Down, or something like that? And but there was an Eddie Guerrero controversy. Yeah, but there was definitely the Eddie Guerrero controversy. But anyway, he likes wrestling now. He likes WWE. He's changed his mind. So, no, this was a very interesting interview. The first half of it is all about, it's not about WWE, but it's about, you know, just sort of the outlook of the media and the sports media business. Nick Khan, if you don't know, has been an agent for a lot of on-air personalities, including Colin Cowherd. And before WWE hired him to be the chief revenue officer and president, he was involved with WWE making its TV deals with USA, NBC Universal, and Fox for Raw and SmackDown, which were big upgrades for them, more than tripling their rights over the previous term. But anyway, he's a big deal sports agent, and now he's working for WWE, and Colin Cowherd loves this man. And by listening to this interview, Vince McMahon must love this man. He thinks that sleep is overrated. No one wants to hear about it when you're tired. So he must get along well with Vince.
And he put Vince in the same pedestal as like Bob Iger and all these like major, major media moguls.
Absolutely. But this was, we've heard Nick Khan a couple times now on the earnings conference calls. But that's just sort of reading a statement and then taking some Q&A. This was the longest and most in-depth interview I think we've seen publicly with him yet. There might be something before WWE, but not that I've listened to. So I would really recommend listening to this. And there's a lot of interesting thoughts that he has about the sports media business, as well as insight about how he views WWE. That's very interesting. We're going to play about five different clips here in a moment and then talk about each one. But I think in general, it's an interesting contrast from basically his predecessor, George Berrios, who's the previous public face of the company. Besides Vince, Vince doesn't do many media interviews, as you may or may not be able to tell from the previous unauthenticated. But anyway, you know, Vince doesn't do a lot of public interviews. And George Berrios, when he was the president, along with Michelle Wilson, but especially George Berrios, did a lot of the public interviews, conference appearances, CNBC appearances, and things like that. But Nikon is clearly already known in the sort of sports media business. So this is the most that we have really heard from him. And there's a big difference to me in terms of, maybe we'll get to it when we go through these clips, but there's a big difference to me in that, first of all, he sounds a little bit more than Berrios did, like he knows, he's familiar with the pro wrestling business, or I should say the sports entertainment business. Yeah. There's what's become most clear to me now after listening to this is the pivot from Berrios to Nick Khan is very much the pivot from WWE seeing itself as we can be a tech company that has its own streaming service and collects all this data and potentially sells the data and analyzes the data and uses the data to do target marketing, from we're a company that has really valuable content, intellectual property, and we're going to make great deals for it. So that's the big change that I see has emerged here. So anyway, we will play the first clip here, which involves Cowherd asking sort of what does it take to create a star for WWE?
How long do you know and how patient are you when you invest in a personality? How long before you know, okay, we got to turn him into a heel, it's not working, no, we got to flip him into a good guy? I mean, what? How much research do you need to see? Do you make those calls? Does Vince make those calls?
I don't make those calls. Vince and Bruce Pritchard, who's a head writer here, and Triple H, otherwise known as Paul Levesque, they make those calls. But something that we're all paying attention to every day is, what is the audience saying? So it's one of the things that when we entered the pandemic, it was tricky for us. Because getting that audience reaction, you know, if somebody's over, which is the wrestling parlance for if somebody's become popular, you know, if they're over by how the audience is reacting. We had no audience. Ultimately, we filled in that gap through the technology of a company called The Famous Group, where we have all of these screen sets and people reacting in real time to what's going on in the ring, which gives us a sense of whether something's working or not. So a lot of people just go to Twitter. My personal thoughts on Twitter, you have a very small percentage of the population that are very vocal and very influential there. I don't want us to be influenced by that. That's just one voice to look at. But what we want to look at is the actual massive voice that's present in this country and internationally, and that's through audience reaction.
So there's that. Go ahead.
So I think the biggest takeaway on that, and I want to hear your thoughts, Brandon, is him kind of downplaying Twitter as an influence, saying it's a small percentage and that's not the audience that you're trying to cater to, because it's such a small percentage. And we see the biggest WWE backlash is usually through Twitter. That's where more people are critical of the product and the programming. Do you think Twitter really is a small percentage and it should be ignored for what he says? Or is this kind of just like they know there's negativity on Twitter and they're just kind of like, that doesn't mean much because it's so small?
I've done a couple of these Net Promoter Score surveys where I'm trying to, the intent is to get random samples. I'm getting them through Facebook. It's not through Twitter, and it's not through people who are purportedly connected with my social media in any way. And in those surveys, I'm asking, you know, how likely would you be to recommend these seven wrestling programs, including WWE, AEW, Impact, Ring of Honor, New Japan. And what I see is there's more positivity for the main roster programs than you would expect if you only read Twitter. But there's still more positivity for AEW and more positivity for New Japan. I think the downplaying of the negativity from Twitter is highly overrated. I think WWE is a company that's the main roster product has been booked by Vince McMahon for a number of years, and Vince McMahon for a number of years has not known how to get the intended reactions from his audience, and it's been to the detriment of the company and of the talent and of the industry. I think it's obviously he was recording this sometime probably last week. This came out on I think Wednesday, it's an interview that came out a few days before WrestleMania happened, and we've got at least some of the time they're piping in fake crowd noise, even despite the fact that they've got 20 some odd fans in attendance. So he's also making the point that, well, they listen to their, rather than listening to what happens on Twitter or other places online, we listen to our fans in attendance, which is just not the case for a number of years. As I said, if you go back and watch W content for the last few years, or take a sampling of it, I think you will find that Vince's product is often unable to get the intended reactions and does not necessarily listen to the crowd. Or I think they listen, they interpret something from what they get from the crowd, but don't necessarily adjust in the right way. And piping in fake crowd noise, as they appeared to do this weekend, I think just speaks to a distrust that the audience is going to react in the way that they want to react.
All right, so we can segue to the next clip here, where Colin asked him, what qualities do you look for in stars? So we can play that clip.
Is there a similarity between TV and a WWE performer in it quality that you're looking for or that almost always works?
I think there's a couple things. I think, you know, you talked about a couple of different examples there. So to me, theater is an actor's medium. Film is a director's medium. TV is a writer's medium. So it always starts with the writing. So what made The Sopranos great? You put a star in a poorly written show, that show's going to tank. You put an unknown person, James Gandolfini in the late 90s, into a show that's well-written, that person's going to become a big star. So the same applies here. Our writers are phenomenal, and it starts with them. Then you have to have the character. So the character that works over and over, it's no different, in my opinion, than what's made you so special in your genre. You're you. It's just when the light turns on, you're you amplified. And that amplified effect, if you have the goods without being amplified, if you can turn it on to that next level once the light goes on, you have a chance of being something. We have the good fortune here where if you don't have that big Colin Cowherd or Rock type personality, we could put a mask on you. We could give you a manager. We can supplement that in a way that other folks in other mediums can't. So that tends to be what I think makes for these individual characters in all of these mediums.
So there's quite a bit there. I guess the first thing I want to highlight is he says that, you know, if you put on a poorly written show with a big star, you know, it's going to tank. But if you have an unknown person like James Gandolfini in the late 90s into a show that's well written, that person's going to be a huge star. And he says that applies as well to WWE. So basically what he's saying is that it's the writing that makes the star, not the star's ability or experience or whatever. It's how well written he is by the writers.
I mean, there's some truth to that, I guess. I mean, I think star power and well-booked storylines, a well-booked promotion, those things are part of, you know, those things being good are depend on each other. You can't really develop a star into a big star unless that star is promoted and booked well. And even if you've got pretty good booking, you might not be able to develop a star that well. Yet on the other hand, you can take examples like the first one that comes to mind is this Sandman in ECW, where ECW maybe is an example in this case of, at least in relation to the Sandman, being a really well-booked promotion that was had its finger on the pulse of a certain kind of zeitgeist and culture in the late 90s or mid-90s. And, you know, Sandman, who's not necessarily a very talented wrestler in the ring or not necessarily a great promo, but a but a very interesting character that could be the kind of character smoking cigarettes, swinging a cane, drinking beer that connected with an audience in its time. And because he was promoted well, Paul Heyman was able to make a very valuable star out of him. But yeah, I don't know. It really makes me wonder, what does Nick Khan really think? And I don't know. He did say on the earnings call a few weeks ago, or I guess that would have been February, that he thinks the in-ring product is great. And this was sort of in response to a question about ratings and whether, you know, ratings, whether they're going to do anything to address ratings, which they don't really think are down. And by the way, we should mention here, Raw and SmackDown have been doing pretty well in the ratings by my reading. TV ratings are hard to read in this environment, but the trends that we see over the last couple quarters show NXT and AEW sort of sliding, and Raw and SmackDown holding up or growing. So, for all we could say about, you know, the WWE product has a lot of problems, the viewership's doing okay in the last quarter or so. It was not the trajectory that I saw it on. I'm one of the people in December, when AEW was doing some pretty strong viewership, I looked to me like we're on a course for Dynamite to be doing equal to Raw in some younger demos. That has not materialized here in the fourth month of 2021. I think I struggle often to, when I talk to people on occasion who are not inundated in the wrestling business, to explain why I think WWE has the problems that it does in terms of what the creative really means economically to WWE. But I think, you know, Vince does a lot of things, including misevaluates talent. He undervalues certain people, maybe overvalues other people, or he just miscasts people. There seem to be, I think there's sort of like three major things here, and talent misevaluation is one, an inability to execute a long-term storyline is another. And I think there's just a vast two-fakeness about the show, which comes in a variety of forms, in the forms of sort of angles being more fake than they really need to be, so they don't resonate with the audience. Promos being inundated with corporate speak, and promos being strictly scripted, which Paul Heyman this week defended as they have to be that way because Vince McMahon has to know what you're going to say because it might jeopardize his very valuable business relationships, which I think is overestimated. And we saw this, you know, really, really curious example this week or this weekend, where the rain delay caused this carousel of impromptu promos to happen at the very beginning of WrestleMania, where a lot of them were pretty good. And I think they, you know, a lot of them were probably that given wrestler's best promo in a while, just because they were just off the cuff and they felt real and authentic. And you felt more like you were seeing a human being that you could connect with, I think. But anyway, all that stuff and the production style that they do and all these camera cuts and so forth, et cetera, I think all that ends up weakening WWE's ability to cultivate stars and tell stories that people care about. Obviously, they still manage to do so nonetheless, but I think all that results in lower than they would have otherwise viewership, consumer product sales, ticket sales, streaming subscriptions. And they sort of related to what we were saying earlier about, you know, how seriously should you take Twitter, you know, before COVID and soon, probably after COVID, you have events that get unintended crowd reactions where people who are supposed to be cheered or who are booked as heroes are booed, and vice versa. And you always have this plausible deniability that it's just the vocal minority. You don't really need to take those people seriously. And I think it's less so it's a vocal minority, and it's more so like what Wade Keller is called, the bellwether fans. If you got fans who are telling you, sort of forecasting what more fans are going to be thinking and feeling later.
So with what he said, do you believe that WWE takes unknown people and they make them stars with their writing?
Sort of. I mean, like literally, I mean, nobody really knows who Bianca Belair was a few years ago.
Now and there was another thing he said in that quote, saying that if you're not a Colin Cowherd or, you know, rock personality, they could just put a mask on you or give you a manager. I found that very interesting because WWE is the company that normally doesn't put masks on people because they can't show the facials. They can't show the emotion. I found that very interesting.
Yeah, and they don't really do managers, although there are exceptions. We saw that in the example of WrestleMania. You got Paul Heyman, you got MVP out there in manager roles. You've also got other bodyguard figures and things like that. But no, it doesn't gel very much with the reality of this company over the last, let's say, 5 years. So I think Nick Khan is a smart person and a very talented agent and negotiator. I can only think that all of what he's saying here are not his real thoughts. I think there's a tremendous value that he has to provide to WWE in terms of being a deal maker for this company. And but I don't know. I can't see how you could watch this product if he does and then think that this product, the core content of this company is really being maximized. But you have to, when you make these appearances and things, I don't expect him to bury Vince, to bury his boss and say he's, you know, to say the things that I would say here. But so I don't know if there's another way to say it that is more honest.
Speaking of deals, it's been heavily rumored that, you know, Nick Khan could be the guy that brokers a sale of WWE. Colin asked him, you know, why you think Vince won't sell WWE. And we have that clip right here.
So I think he has no interest in selling, number one, because he's built it. Number two, because he's still the best person to run it. And number three, what's he going to do? There was one executive who said to him a couple of years ago, where are you summering? And Vince was like, what are you talking about? Like summering. Like, where are you summering? Where are you spending your summer?
My office. And
Vince McMahon was like, I'm spending in Stamford, Connecticut in my office. What are you talking about? So he's not going to be the guy on a yacht and doing all those things. I think he's very interested in continuing to work.
I love to work.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing, and I want your thoughts on it, Brandon, is, you know, he has no interest in selling it, number one, because he's built it and he's still the best person to run it. And the next thing he says is that, you know, we talked about an executive said to him, you know, where are you summering? And he goes, what are you talking about? He goes, well, where are you summering? And he goes, you know, I'm spending it in Stamford, Connecticut. You know, what are you talking about? Obviously, we know Vince is a guy that doesn't sleep. And from what we know, he doesn't really take vacation. He's almost at every pay-per-view and SmackDown and Raw. I think live shows are the only thing he probably doesn't show up at. But, you know, there is this common core belief that he will not sell because this is his identity. This is what he is. I mean, do you think Nick Khan is hitting that on the money there with what he said, or do you think it's a possibility
I think if he's saying what he's saying there, he's probably gotten that impression from Vince up to this point. I can't imagine they haven't discussed the subject. And that aligns with what I believe, that Vince will never sell this company, because I think that's a good way to put it. As you put it, it's his identity, and that this is what he does with his life every day. And I don't, again, I've said this many times, I don't think WWE will be acquired by another company in Vince McMahon's lifetime, maybe after. And as I discussed, after the Peacock deal, NBC Universal certainly seems to be positioned as a company that is suited and would benefit from acquiring this company. Again, don't expect that to happen in Vince's lifetime, but maybe after.
And one of the interesting things from this Nick Khan, and this was the non-WWE stuff, was he is on the strong belief that, you know, companies like Amazon and maybe even Apple would buy networks. So they could possibly be in the market for WWE. Because once again, it's the intellectual property and all the stuff that Nick Khan is. And that's why I think there's, you know, people think like Nick Khan is the guy who would be able to sell the company because how he strategizes it, you know. How he, you know, he brought up also in an interview the Marvel thing, how, you know, Disney buys Marvel at a low price and they turn it into this, you know, giant franchise.
And I think there's some similarities there in how they now view their W Studios business, their film business, in that they're no longer looking to be the ones producing the films, but they license the intellectual property, and then you make a movie based on that. And I don't think that completely translates. I don't think you're going to be making an endless series of, I don't know, what would be an example? Fiend movies. But we saw a hell of a Fiend movie tonight, though, didn't we? But anyway, I don't think there's nearly as much value, at least in movies, but there's, you know, wrestling's a different thing, and there's a lot of ways to monetize the intellectual property, and there probably will be in new ways, including NFTs in the future.
Another thing that Colin Cowherd asked Nick Khan was, how does the WWE actually measure success? And we have a clip right here.
What will, in the eyes of the WWE, what will be a success? What are your standards? What are your goals? Be it download, TV rating, merchandise sales. How is it viewed as eventually, oh, this worked, this hit?
So this is our first time where it's exclusively on Peacock. First event. We did one 3 weeks ago called Fastlane, which was on WWE Network and Peacock. WrestleMania is exclusively on Peacock. So the interesting thing for us is Peacock is available for free in all of the Comcast cable homes. There's about 25 million homes. So let's say on a great WrestleMania year, we were up to 2 million plus subs on WWE Network in the United States. Now we're available for free in 25 million homes. We know our first event 3 weeks ago was a massive success in terms of subs for Peacock. We have those numbers. They've asked us not to disclose it. We're happy to abide by that. But it was a big event. So the expectation for this weekend is big in terms of how many people subscribe. Keep in mind, WWE Network was $9.99 a month. Peacock right now is $9.99 for 4 months.
So I think the biggest thing there is he says that they got the subscription numbers from Peacock, you know, from basically people, you know, signing up for Fastlane. And he said those numbers are very impressive, but obviously, you know, they were told not to disclose them. I mean, I could see that because that was when basically people thought, oh, I have to switch over. So obviously those numbers were going to be very good, because I think that was the first switchover was, oh, well, Fastlane's coming. You know, my subscription's going to end in a week anyway for WWE Network. I'll subscribe now and see how this goes.
I mean, yeah, he obviously doesn't quantify it and says that NBC Universal doesn't want them to. So, yeah, there's a couple things there, which is, I think, one of his favorite opening phrases. So in the press release that was put out tonight, the language, and this is totally like reading tea leaves, but the language that they use is they had millions of viewers, millions, plural, of viewers on Peacock. What does that mean? who knows? Again, U.S. subscribers were never much higher for the W Network than 1.1 million, maybe 1.2 million at a peak. But NBC Universal's Peacock is in maybe up to 30 million homes at this point. So maybe more people watched this WrestleMania than before. I don't know. But clearly that's a big job for them. And then they've been pushing very hard to get people to convert. And I think that's why there's a two-night takeover. And one of the nights was simulcasted on Peacock to get people converted over. And obviously they shut down the U.S. version of the network on April 4th so that you had to be on Peacock for WrestleMania, which is, of course, their biggest event. Kind of what I think Colin Cowherd is getting at in that question, which isn't really what Nick Khan responded to, though, is how do you measure success, and including things like, yeah, I'm very curious to see how they report success, or how an investor or an outside observer is going to be able to measure success in the future for this company, at least related to the network content. I don't know that NBC Universal is going to allow them to report information related to their product's performance on Peacock. How does a future potential suitor, if you're going to negotiate with other streaming services in the future, maybe when this deal is up, how are they going to know what you really have to deliver if there aren't public numbers? I'm curious about that. But I'm curious just for a sort of a selfish WrestleNomics reason. I'm not going to be able to know on a quarterly basis, at least, what the latest W Network subscriber numbers are. And obviously there's questions in there too about, like, well, what really matters? Is it TV ratings? Is it digital social and whatever? So, but anyway, yeah.
And the last clip that we're going to play on here is Colin asking Nick Khan about international growth. What country does he want to grow in?
Yes. The big news that everybody took out of, well, the wrestling news sites, yes, took out of this, that, oh my God, he talked about Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey. but there's other things in here like international growth, which is a favorite WrestleNomics topic.
Where do you want to grow the market? What country do you think right now I'm going to seize that? I'm going to grow that space.
Latin America and specifically Mexico. I think if you look at the Lucha Libre product, which is the authentic Mexican wrestling style, there are two smaller Mexican promotional companies that exist right now. I think if we if we put the WWE effects onto one of those companies and we kept the authenticity, I'm talking about building our own company, not acquiring either one of these. But if it had the WWE touch on it, the WWE work ethic on it, ultimately you can build that marketplace out where you have certain events there that are still doing 30 million viewers, things that you haven't seen in the United States outside of the Super Bowl in years, you can still do on a consistent basis there. If you're on free to air, which is their terminology for broadcast network and the terminology here, and you have the right local superstars. So we have a hyper focus on that region.
So Mexico looks like his main market where he wants to grow. And it almost seemed from further on in that not just, hey, maybe we want to run more live events in Mexico, maybe even Raw or SmackDown or a pay-per-view. It seemed like a possible touring promotion, possibly NXT Mexico. That's kind of what I got out of that. What did you get out of that, Brandon?
Yeah, so there's global localization. You got NXT. Paul Levesque rolled out this presentation a few years ago at a WWE Business Partner Summit where he stood in front of the map of the world and there were little NXT logos on all the continents. And that's already happened in the UK. Looks like India might be the next spot. Latin America is a big market that he sees opportunity in. I think the use of Bad Bunny is a way to address that. A Puerto Rican musician who's very popular. So I think my sense is that he reads Mexico is a big market for pro wrestling. It is. Maybe, by the way, Japan is as well. There were rumors that there would be an NXT Japan just before COVID hit, that maybe that was imminent, but that obviously did not materialize. I guess my reading is that, well, he views that there's popular wrestling already in Mexico. So why not, instead of trying to create a wrestling interest from scratch in a country like China that's not particularly, doesn't have a long history of pro wrestling fandom, why not go to a market? And he's talking about Latin America generally here too, not just Mexico. But he clearly referred to AAA and CMLL, not by name.
Yes, yeah.
So listening to this for the first time, I was like, oh my God, he's going to buy AAA. No, okay, see, he clearly said
that's
otherwise.
That's what it seemed like to me.
Yeah. Okay. So, but yeah, I think, UK is one thing where you've got the same language and you've got a huge WWE legacy in UK. WWE does not have a huge legacy in Mexico. WWE has a very different style product than Lucha Libre. WWE, when they have signed in the past major stars from the Lucha Libre world, including the original Mystico, who they branded Sin Cara, including the recently exited La Sombra and Andrade, that didn't work out. And at least in the case of Sin Cara, it was clearly part of it. I'm sure a lot of it had to do with the personality of Luis Uribe, but probably a lot of it. Also, I think their agents and their philosophy was that the wrestling that he knew how to do wasn't the right kind of wrestling for them. I think they just have WWE wrestling is vastly different, especially the wrestling that they think is right and best is vastly different from what Lucha Libre is. I think there's a tremendous risk that you're going to be seen as a large corporate invader and not an authentic wrestling brand. I think you're going to have tremendous local leadership, people who are not, a good road agent producer from WWE to go in there and be the guy in charge of NXT Mexico. But it would have to be, I think, a really Mexico leaning and authentic leaning kind of system. And there's, I think, there's a lot of wind to fight against in that situation. And I think it would be similar for an NXT Japan or whatever you want to call it as well. And my cynicism is that you're going to have WWE philosophy come in there and say, wait a minute, why are you bumping like that? You know, why aren't you working this way instead of that way? And which may be a subtle difference to an audience, but just that using that as an example of, you know, we need to do things the WWE way here because that's what we think is best, and not taking into account that you're deconstructing the authentic Mexican wrestling experience.
And to go full circle, you took the mask off Andrade, and you also took the mask off of Hijo del Fantasma. Like, you took the mask off these guys when they went there. And in Mexico, you only lose your mask if you built up this great, whether it's master's mask or master's hair. Like, it, no one just doesn't wear their mask the next day. You have to, like, get somewhere to lose your mask. I don't know how they would. What if they just wake up one day and they're like, yeah, you're not going to have your mask? I don't think the Mexican audience would. That's not what they grew up on. Like,
I guess the keys that I'm trying to get to is, like, the creative is fundamentally different.
Yeah.
The training is fundamentally different from what WWE is currently doing in the Performance Center in Orlando and in the UK, and probably what they're going to do in India. They're probably going to, why wouldn't they be teaching people a US style of wrestling there? So it's very different, and I don't trust WWE to understand the difference. Anyway, anything else? Plugs? When's the next?
So we're actually recording this week, so it will hit not this Wednesday coming up, but the Wednesday after. So, we're going to do part two of our deep dive into XPW, and it'll start getting interesting. I believe we'll probably end up on this episode covering the incident with Messiah, and, you know, were there hitmen hired by Rob Black? And it's still a mystery. It was actually on Unsolved Mystery. Or
the thumbs with like the thumbs being removed.
Yeah, it was actually on America's Most Wanted. That's what it was.
Wow.
So there's a lot more to the Rob Black story. We talked a lot about, like, really the genesis of it and the ECW incident, but there's a lot more to the Rob Black story that we're going to really get into as it goes on. And this is going to be a two-parter, possibly a three-parter venture for Rediscovering Indies. So you can check us out, Rediscovering the Indies, and we're available on, you know, Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
Wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, but also Twitter, RTI Pod, Facebook, Instagram, Rediscovering Indies. You know, like I plug it all the way. I put the This Day in Independent Wrestling History. And Brandon, did you know that today, in 1995, the Rock and Roll Express defeated Dick Murdoch and Randy Rhodes to win the NWA Tag Team titles in NWA Dallas? Oh, I was just going to say, and then you can follow me at Chris Gello on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
The Wednesday Night War is Over is an article that is new on WrestleNomics.com that is free for everybody to read. There's no ads ever on WrestleNomics.com. The WrestleNomics Patreon is only $5 a month. You get access to the 14,000 data point spreadsheet that has viewership data going back to 2014 for WWE, AEW Impact. There's all the Impact Wrestling viewership that is exclusive to some of the posts that I made recently. Quarter hour viewership for Impact Wrestling is on the Patreon. Impact viewership for various demographics that you won't find anywhere else, but especially the spreadsheet that I update continuously. I'm going to have to update it 5 days a week now because we now have entered the era post Wednesday Night War, where now there is wrestling every weekday for the rest of my life, perhaps. You can follow WrestleNomics at WrestleNomics. You can follow me at Brandon Thurston. I'm Brandon Thurston. He's Chris Gullo. Talk to everybody next time.